Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, synchronized swimming, tailgates before a college football game, late night karaoke, especially late night karaoke. There is nothing better than a duet of summer love, and I can assure you that. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good morning.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Gojo Part 2 for today. We said we've got two interviews. We were fortunate to have two great guests that gave us our time in the same day. We thought it was both pretty timely and relevant information. We wanted to get it to you all at once in two parts. So this is part two of the podcast. We had Chance Lytle from Duke in the first part of the podcast, and we will have Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders helping us preview the AFC North in this podcast.
Ask me what I was doing.
What's that sound, Brandon?
We emptying the clip. Oh, I'm out.
Damn, you got too hyped to empty the clip.
I know. I couldn't land a plane. Common for me in this podcast, but we emptying the clip today.
That's fine. You know what? The first tenet of the four pillars of football in Brian Kelly's era when we were at Notre Dame was start fast. And you started fast emptying the clip right there. We'll figure out the rest as we go. So we're going to take a quick break after I tell you guys about our friends at Dr. Emile Nutrition. Get you right for this interview, because this is about getting you right for football season, and Dr. Emile can help you do that. They're about getting healthy in a way that makes you feel good. I had to solve some of my problems with aggression yesterday. I had had a busy day. I had been sitting in front of my computer all day, and I said, you know what? I need to go out here and touch some grass, rather some iron. And to do that, I dipped into the Dr. Emile pre-workout supplement there, and it's awesome. Gave me that fire inside without making me jittery, tingly. I got a great lift in, felt way better for the rest of the day after. Capped it off with some easy dose sleep support to help make sure I am doing the proper things for my recovery, and away we go. Dr. Emile's natural array of high-quality supplements were hand-selected to enhance each aspect of your personal wellness journey. Visit DrEmileNutrition.com and use our discount code GOJO20 for 20% off plus free shipping on all orders. Again, that's Dr. Emile, spelled DREMIL nutrition.com. When we come back, Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders and the AFC North next. All right, very excited to check in with an old friend at this point, Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders fame, joining us here on the podcast. And Aaron was a guy I met at the Sloan Analytics Conference, which I think lovingly referred to as Nerd Spring Break. Aaron, is that probably a pretty accurate version of what Sloan's become in Boston?
Yeah, I mean, everybody who's everybody goes there to see each other. And it is like, especially the basketball community, like there's a lot of football people there, but oh my God, every basketball analytics person is there.
It's amazing, too, the basketball analytics crowd and, like, the surrounding media members that come in a part of it, because there was plenty of my ESPN colleagues there. It was the first place I ever had Patronacy, which is exactly what it sounds like. It was a shot of half Patron and half Hennessy that was handed out later on. I think it was, like, Shane Battier and all those guys that were out at some bar after the fact. So it definitely gets going there.
Yeah, this is what I miss by living here. Yeah. Because I live here, I don't tend to stay in a hotel near the conference, which means I'm not going out to bars after the conference because I have to drive home.
You know what? And a smart decision, and one that we greatly appreciate here. So that was, you know, how I came to know Aaron. But the folks at Football Outsiders have been doing phenomenal work for a long time now. They are a staple in getting ready for the preseason. And we've got Aaron on to take a look at the AFC North as our divisional previews roll along here. But Aaron, the Football Outsiders Almanac is the Bible for so many of us heading into every football season. It is one of my favorite reads getting ready for the course of every year. you know, for anyone that's looking to still pick that up with time going before the season, what is the almanac? What are people getting when they pick up this?
Right. So it's our preview of the season, over 550 pages with lots of advanced stats, chapters on all 32 NFL teams talking about where they were last year and where they're going this year, plus fantasy football projections and write-ups of all the skill position players. And there's a small college preview with write-ups of the top 50 college football teams as well. You can get the printed copy of the Almanac by searching Amazon for Football Outsiders Almanac 2022. There's also an electronic copy, and you get that by becoming an FO Plus subscriber. That's our premium service at footballoutsiders.com/subscribe. That URL tells you about all the things that you get as part of FO Plus.
It's incredible. It's such a phenomenal resource. Like you said, if you are a fantasy football player, if you are someone getting into the sports betting space and you want all the added information here, because you guys are about looking forward and trying to predict. And one of the best tools for that, as we get ready to have this conversation, Aaron, I also would appreciate, DVOA is something that's going to be referenced a lot. It is something that you are part of creating. It's an incredible tool and metric. So when people hear DVOA, can you explain this metric to them so they kind of know what we're going to be talking about?
Right. So the short, DVOA stands for defense adjusted value over average, although it's actually adjusted for your opponent, no matter whether you're on offense or defense. The simple explanation is it measures success on every play, considering the down and distance, adjusted for a league average baseline that's based on the situation and the opponent. And that gives you an efficiency rating above or below zero for offense, defense, and special teams.
So taking into account all the factors that we know going in, because I saw our mutual friend Mina Kimes post this the other day. So much of the conversation around analytics, around data science and sports, acts like it's ignoring all of these factors that go into a football game every weekend. And that couldn't be further from the truth as far as this is assessed. So it's a good background to have on this for sure, Aaron.
Yeah, we try to account for as much as possible. But the things we don't account for is why we write a book, right? Like, there's stats in here, but there's also a lot of words. And the words get into explaining the stats, but also talk about the things that the stats might be missing. I mean, for example, you know, intangibles exist. We're just not measuring them with our stats because they're intangibles. That's what intangibles means. It means you can't measure them, but we're not going to ignore them. That's what we write about in the words that go along with the numbers.
So, you know what? Intangibles is a good foray, I think, into this division, because when we look at the AFC North from last season, the Cincinnati Bengals made it all the way to the Super Bowl and surprised the hell out of a lot of people, myself included, based on how they did it. And I feel like so often when we talk about Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and this run, it has to do with the intangibles that a quarterback like that brought to the table. So, based on what you guys expected and what ended up happening on the field with the Bengals, especially towards the end of the year, what do you attribute that to as you've looked back at that? Is there something you can attribute what they managed to put together to?
Yeah, I think you do have to give Burrow some points for being under the lights, not for the first time in his career, right? Because, I mean, in college, he was clearly, LSU was a really big team. They played in really important games. But, you know, for the first time in the NFL, his first time going through the NFL playoffs, he clearly didn't fade or fold in any way. He played up to the best of his ability. I think you got to give him a little bit of credit for that. Cincinnati, by our numbers, was essentially an average team during the regular season. They actually come out slightly below average, but that's because of that last game where they sat everybody. If you take that game out, they're actually a little bit above average, but very close to average, and had an easy schedule that made them look a little bit better than they were. And then they got to the playoffs, and they weren't fantastic in the playoffs, but they were pretty good, and they won each game. Like, they didn't blow out their opponents, but they steadily won each game. It's not like they were sneaking past people. Like, they won by reasonable margins. They just went on a really nice run.
So you had that really nice run culminate to the point that they did. And we knew coming off this season, it seemed like a pretty identifiable need for the Bengals. They couldn't protect their star quarterback. We're seeing him deal with some of the effects of that now as he sits, you know, and waits to get fully healthy for the start of camp here. Aaron, is it as simple as asking, like, was last year a bit of a fluke for Cincinnati? Did they improve enough in the areas they need to where this can be a consistent expectation for a franchise that has historically never done the right things to manufacture winning above a certain level?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of a fluke, but if they made the right moves this offseason and things go well, they'll sort of unflukeify it. Right? Like, the Bengals are going to be better this year in underlying statistics than they were last year. With this offensive line being better, they're going to be a better team. It's just the results may not look as good. Like, they may go 10-7 again, but maybe that doesn't win the division this time. Or they win the division, but they lose in the playoffs. Like, they're going to probably be a better team than they were last year. It is going to be really interesting to see how much the sacks were the offensive line and how much it was Burrow, because that offensive line was hideous last year. But if you watch the individual sacks, some of them are on Burrow. Like, some of them, he's just trying to make something happen and holding the ball too long and not throwing it away when he should throw it away. And some of the sacks are on him. And even with a better offensive line, he's still going to take some of those sacks.
And obviously, it got to the point where I was like, oh, I think he likes getting sacked. There's, like, in a sense of, like, waking himself up and, like, getting, like, oh, I'm going to show these MFers. Because, like, he was taking most sacked quarterback in NFL last year. But how much of this, because I struggle with the fluke part just because it was such lightning in the bottle out of nowhere. But how much credit does Zach Taylor deserve as a head coach?
I mean, I will admit, in the areas where, like, the analytics people like to look at coaching, he does not do particularly well. I don't think he's particularly aggressive on fourth downs, for example. But, I mean, you know, there's all these other motivational parts of coaching. And it's weird because if he was really good at the motivational parts of coaching, you have to ask yourself, where was that before last year? But clearly last year he had his guys ready to play and the schemes were good and his coordinators were managed well. And Anarumo, or however you pronounce his name, I never pronounce his name right, the defensive coordinator.
I haven't gotten it right once, Aaron. It's unbelievable.
The best stretch of his career in the playoffs, right? Shut down Patrick Mahomes for a half. So things were managed well last year, but I don't think anybody, whether they're an analytics person or a scouting person, I honestly don't think there's anybody, unless they're a really big Bengals fan, who would put Zach Taylor on their list of the top head coaches in the NFL.
Like a lot of people out there, I'm a big Swiftie. And so as you can imagine, when the Taylor Swift Eras Tour was announced last summer, it was like the Super Bowl for me. I had everything ready to go to give myself the best chance of getting great tickets. My whole family was in on the action. We spent hours in front of our monitors waiting for the link for the presale before the presale so that when we got our chance in line, we clicked the right button at the right time to make sure we had our chance at great seats for this once-in-a-lifetime concert opportunity. Because when you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else is going to get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Gojo. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. So amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Gojo. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Gojo. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. No, I would agree in that one. Aaron, as far as the rest of this division now, because I think you're right, so much of the Cincinnati Bengals story is going to be told relative to what happened in the division last year. And the Baltimore Ravens, to me, are at the front of that conversation. Baltimore, we knew going into the year, already dealing with injuries. The running back room was decimated. But according to Football Outsiders, they led the NFL in adjusted games lost. But is that still somehow even selling short just the levels of potential, or I shouldn't say potential, production lost to injury for Baltimore last year?
Yeah, so adjusted games lost measures the production lost not only when guys miss games, but when they're just on the injured list, because you figure that a guy on the injured list is not playing at 100%. And we measure starters and important situational players. The Ravens had the highest AGL of any team in our database going back to 2001, and they would have had the highest AGL if we only had 16 games. So it's not the 17-game season that made them set the record. They would have set the record in 16 games too. They were just completely and totally injured. The running backs, the cornerbacks, Ronnie Stanley, Lamar Jackson missing games. Like, and then it just became this cascade. At some of these positions, it was this cascade. Like, you lose one corner, so now you're playing your fourth corner as your third. And then you lose another corner, so now your fifth corner is playing regularly. And then you lose another one. He's out for the week. And so now your sixth corner is playing regularly. And you just keep going down the depth chart. It just hurts more and more.
Go ahead, Brandon.
They turned that, obviously you saw that in the second half of the season where they couldn't talent their way out of, you know, these games. And as close as the games were, still would be on the losing side of it. But I guess how much can you see the Ravens being now the exact opposite, be at the top of the division and be Super Bowl contenders just based on the draft alone?
Well, I don't think based on the draft alone, because they had a sweet draft. It's an interesting draft because they drafted players that draft picks are very high on, but who play at less premium positions. So it's like, okay, you have Linderbaum. He's ready to go right into the starting lineup at center, but is that as important as drafting a left tackle who may take longer to develop, right? And also, I don't think Kyle Hamilton is playing with the ones right now. I think they're still planning on starting Chuck Clark, and Hamilton would play in like three safety sets. So I don't think it's this year's draft that makes Baltimore so dangerous. And then Ojabo, of course, is going to like miss half the year. That's the edge rusher that they took in the second round. I don't think it's this year's draft. It's that there's so much talent on this team when they're healthy. If you look at 2019 and 2020, like 2019, they blew away any advanced stats that anybody does. They were so far and away the best team in the league, only to lose in their first playoff game, which happens, right? I mean, it happened to the Patriots in 2010. It happened to the 49ers in 87. Like, sometimes a team dominates the regular season and then they just lose in the playoffs. 2020 also, they were a really good team, both sides of the ball. Plus, of course, they have the best, most consistent special teams, which you can't write off because special teams are really inconsistent for most teams. But Baltimore is one of the few teams where they're consistently good, so you always have to add a little value from that. So you look at that and you look how good Jackson is when you consider his rushing value, and you look at the quality of the players on the defense. I mean, there are some questions about the edge rush, but you know, Marcus Peters is back and Marlon Humphrey is back. And like I said, the safeties, like if Kyle Hamilton can play, that's three good safeties. There's just a lot of talent on this team, and they have the easiest schedule in the division.
Well, and we have to account for certain members of that secondary finally putting their contact lenses in and affecting that. So we've got guys that will actually be playing with the full complement of their sight. But with the Ravens, Lamar Jackson, I think, has been the most discussed player this summer when it comes to on-the-field exploits. So much of Lamar and anonymous quotes about him from the league and his passing as the subject of this. For you guys, Aaron, as you've looked at that facet of Lamar's game specifically, what have you seen change for him, if anything, from 2019 to where we sit right now with Lamar Jackson, especially in the passing attack?
The fact is he was a better passer in 2019 than 2020 and 2021 as far as his numbers and production. And he still has trouble throwing to the outside downfield stuff, right? I mean, he lives with Mark Andrews on the inside. But I think he's a good passer. And that rushing, so it's weird because in our numbers for quarterbacks, we compare quarterback runs to other quarterback runs. Mm. And if you actually compare him to all quarterback runs, Lamar Jackson is not particularly more efficient than the average quarterback running with the ball. But quarterback runs as a group are like the most efficient play in football. So he has so many of those and they're so efficient that he has a lot of production, like top 10 production because of all those runs.
It is incredible. So with the conversation about him, it always goes back to the receiver room. You mentioned Mark Andrews. That wasn't really a position, even with all the draft picks they had, that they addressed materially. Hollywood Brown gets traded away this offseason. So as you look at the way they've gone about addressing that position relative to this passing attack, what does it tell you about what we may be able to expect from the Ravens as far as a plan there this year?
A lot of two tight end sets. I mean, they went and drafted two tight ends in the fourth round. Plus they have Andrews, plus they have Nick Boyle, who's more of a blocker. But, I mean, they keep telling the press, we are satisfied with our wide receivers. We are satisfied with our wide receivers. They haven't gone out and signed any veterans. Like, they're going with Rashad Bateman and DuVernay and James Prochet, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. And, you know, a lot of draft Knicks were very excited about Bateman when he came out of college last year, and I know that our fantasy projections at Football Outsiders have Bateman a lot higher than ADP. We're really high on him for this year. But DuVernay is a speedster, special teams guy who nobody's ever seen as a regular receiver. And Prochet hasn't done much in the NFL in his, you know, year so far. And there's like nobody behind them. So, I mean, that's the biggest weakness of the Ravens team is the wide receiver position. Absolutely. You just have to trust that their offense is going to be built more around the run and Lamar Jackson running, and Mark Andrews as the main pass catcher is going to be the tight end.
Now, I'm a Ravens fan, so I'm used to the veteran wide receiver coming in and just kind of being the torch, the main receiver. Is there any chance that if the Ravens go out and get a Odell Beckham Jr., somebody who is homeless right now that's kind of just waiting to sign with the team?
I mean, I figure if it was going to happen, it would have happened right now, except for Odell Beckham Jr. because he's injured and he's going to miss the first half of the season. That would be a really intriguing addition, because if you want to give Lamar Jackson a receiver that's going to make him more dangerous throwing to the outside, I can't think of anyone better than Odell Beckham Jr. And if he is available for the second half of the season, that would be a sweet addition. I expected them to bring in someone like Emmanuel Sanders or something, you know, one of those veteran presence type guys who is going to give you steady production instead of, with these youngsters, you have this sort of, you know, high risk, high reward. Like, we don't know what these guys are. Like, maybe they're as good as the Ravens think they are, but probably not. And whereas with Emmanuel Sanders or someone like that, like, you know exactly what you're getting with him. But they didn't bring in anyone like that, and there's only 2 weeks left in the preseason, so if they haven't done it yet, they're not doing it.
Yeah, it's fascinating to consider, all while we've still got a quarterback who hasn't signed the long-term deal that everyone's been staring at in this situation, wondering when it's coming.
He said week one is his deadline. If it's not signed by week one, he's not doing anything during the season.
Yeah, and so again, negotiating on his own behalf, that subplot, it doesn't look like so far has had any effect on the way Lamar Jackson has approached the work. By all accounts, he showed up, he's, you know, heavier this year and pretty well built, so it seems like the football portion is going to be sort of untouched by this, but you never know the way that those things can somewhat manifest. Those, however, are comparatively simpler problems at quarterback than we're going to deal with the Browns. I mean, Aaron, with the situation surrounding Deshaun Watson and the impending suspension, the length of which we still don't know as of the recording of this podcast, the NFL is in the middle of its appeal process, but we haven't heard a definitive ruling yet. Has this been one of the hardest teams for you guys to try and handicap going into this year for that reason?
Oh, yeah. In the Football Outsiders Almanac, we assumed that the league was going to get its full season suspension. And then the word came down it was going to be 6 games. So I've done another set of simulations with a 6-game suspension. But now it may end up being longer than 6 games, but less than a full season, which is complicated for further reasons. Because if you're the Browns, like, how much is Watson getting, you know, you kind of hope that Brissett can keep you in the wild card race, and then all of a sudden Watson comes back in week 11? Like, what are you getting with only 6 or 7 games of him? This also has an impact on the rest of the division because as of now, if Watson is out for six games, he does play the Bengals and the Ravens twice. But as the suspension gets longer, it changes how often he plays the Ravens and the Bengals, which changes how hard the Ravens and Bengals schedules are.
And looking at the team around him, so with everything that you've done there and Jacoby Brissett, who's now in camp taking the reps for the ones after that first preseason game, as we look at the rest of this team, is there a discernible flaw in this roster outside of that? Because the rest of this seems well-built in all the places you'd want.
No, there isn't really. Like, our numbers on the defense kind of expect a little bit of regression. But if you look just at the talent, like at positions, right, they've got the great edge rusher. They have strong cornerbacks. They've got the lead number one cornerback. They have the promising young middle of the field linebacker in JOK. Offensively, they've got a great offensive line. There are questions, I think, at wide receiver, right? Like, I'm an Amari Cooper believer, and I like Donovan Peoples-Jones, but they're depending on those guys to be one and two, and they're depending on David Bell, a third-round rookie, to be the third guy. So I think there are some questions at receiver, and that's, you know, with Brissett, those questions are going to sound a lot louder than with Watson because Watson can do more with less. But obviously, they've got the great running backs, so they can throw to Kareem Hunt. They can throw to tight ends. This team is well built all around, and you could see them being a real contender if Watson was there for the whole season, but he's not going to be. But we don't know how long he is going to be there for. So, yeah, this was a hard team. And it was a hard team to write about because Rivers McCown wrote the chapter. And, you know, Rivers felt he had to address the issue. It's the elephant in the room. But a lot of Browns fans are very uncomfortable rooting for Deshaun Watson. And we're very uncomfortable talking about the Cleveland front office, which is a front office that people know has been very identified with the analytics movement. They're kind of our guys. And the fact that they're the team that went out and got Watson, when a lot of people in the analytics movement are also very, you know, feel that Watson needs to be punished for what he did, is difficult to deal with.
Yeah. Also with that, just to bring it back to intangibles, isn't that something that Deshaun Watson has like in the upteenth degree of to the point where I've mentioned in past podcasts, not this preseason game withstanding, but I feel like there's a chance that Deshaun Watson has changed quite physically in between the years when it comes to playing quarterback in the NFL. Is there any legitimacy to that concern?
I don't know. Like, what does it mean for a guy's leadership skills to have all these off-the-field issues? How do his teammates see him? I don't know. I'm not in the minds of his teammates, so I don't know what it's like in that locker room. It's a really odd situation, and it's hard to make a guess at it.
Yeah, it's hard to make a guess, and for everyone who has the almanac or will pick it up, I do encourage you to read the chapter, as you mentioned, a really good job of laying out all of the important details of what went on in this case, what has gone on off the field with Deshaun Watson, because as we talked about, no matter what we can say about the football team the Browns had this year and what we know is potentially coming down the road, if this player, just thought of as a player, is on the field with the weapons on this team, there is a ton of potential for the Browns to get exactly what they wanted from a football sense, Aaron, but it does always feel so secondary to the human beings that we know have been affected in so many ways by what's gone on here, not just the victims, but also certainly first and foremost the victims and the alleged victims here, but the people in that fan base, other women's of sexual assault and sexual, other victims of sexual assault and sexual violence that have had to listen to this constant din of this story over the past year.
Yeah, it's got to be tough if you're someone who has dealt with that in your life, that every time we discuss the Cleveland Browns, we have to discuss this, but we have to discuss this.
It is absolutely necessary in that conversation. Like you said, a difficult team to try and predict and handicap. In my sports career, we always got preached the importance of the little things, whether it's having your hand behind the line on a sprint, finishing out every drill, or making sure you have the right 6-inch step to start a drive block on the offensive line. it all mattered. How you do the little things is how you're going to do everything, because small actions have big benefits. This is just like how taking care of your gut health can support your whole body health. With our friends at Seed and Seed's DSO1, their daily symbiotic benefits your gut, skin, and heart health in just two little capsules a day. I'm getting my first shipment on the way here, and I am pumped to try it out. The thing that stands out to me, in addition to all the great health benefits, is the convenience. You don't have to refrigerate DSO1, and so the free travel vial that I'm going to get with the welcome kit, I can take on the go with me. I can have DSO1 with me wherever I need it during my busy schedule. Your guy's gut is the central hub for all these various pathways throughout your body, and a healthy gut microbiome means benefits for digestion, skin health, heart health, your immune system, and more. And everything with DO1 is backed by science. Lots of science. It was developed in collaboration with Seed's scientific board and based on their foundational work in probiotics and the microbiome. And with the new clinical trials and breakthrough research published in top scientific journals, Seed's probiotic research, development, and innovation programs make DSO1 a product you know you can trust. And the best part with prebiotics and probiotics, they work best when they are consistently used like any other routine health habits. So Seed's subscription service is easily going to build DSO1 into your routine with no refrigeration needed. So trust your gut with Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/gojo and use code 25GOJO to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/gojo, code 25GOJO.
And so why don't we head to another team in this division, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who were for so long the class of the AFC North and one of the teams that we thought of as the poster for consistency, and really still are. Mike Tomlin has yet to dip below that 500 mark as an NFL head coach. He has done an incredible job of being MacGyver at that position. Aaron, Ben Roethlisberger is going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback. He was a Super Bowl winning quarterback, but just how much did his presence and his regression alone subvert this team in last season, according to what you guys saw?
Yeah, I mean, he was like a 22nd or 23rd best quarterback in the league. And the fact that he couldn't get the ball downfield anymore really handicapped them. So many short passes, so many short crossing routes. Like, hopefully they can open up the offense a little bit more. Although the first preseason game, apparently Kenny Pickett had all the short passes of the offense, right? Like, and the other is Roethlisberger didn't like to play action. So hopefully they can use play action more now, because Pittsburgh has been this really weird, like for years and years and years, they've used play action less than any other team, and they've been really bad at it, when in general, play action is a really good thing that's really efficient and you want to use it more and you're usually more successful with it. And Pittsburgh's been the opposite of all that. I know, like, George Pickens is getting reports from camp like the dude walks on water. I'm a little skeptical of when guys like shine in camp like that, that they're going to carry that into the regular season. I just keep thinking of the opposite. Like last year, Ja'Marr Chase was the opposite and everyone went into the regular season worried about him. And instead he was Ja'Marr Chase and was awesome. So, and as good as Pickens might be, it still comes down to the quarterback. And Trubisky's not a different guy just because he spent a year sitting behind Josh Allen in Buffalo. He's a below-average starter. And Kenny Pickett, we don't know what he's going to be, but, you know, the probabilities that he's going to be a really good quarterback are not good. Like, this was a bad quarterback draft class. Like, none of these guys came out with very high probability that they're going to be good. That doesn't mean they can't be. It just means they're unlikely to be.
So with that in mind, this team, are you guys projecting that Mitch Trubisky would be the starter at this point? Is that what you guys have operated with, or how have you addressed the quarterback position?
Yeah, we're operating with the expectation that Trubisky is going to be the starter to start the year, and that Pickett is going to take over sometime in the like last third of the year. Like, I mean, they're not necessarily going to be out of it, but if they are out of it, then you turn things over to Pickett. But their defense, we think their defense, numerically, there are reasons just sort of having to do with the trends of how defenses move up and down. There are reasons to believe their defense is going to bounce back a little bit. Like, there is still plenty of, you know, talent on this defense with Hayward and Watt and Minka Fitzpatrick. And their defense was better in the second half of last year than the first half. And of course, you know, every year before that, their defense was really, really good. So we think they're going to have a pretty good defense again. So if their offense could be like slightly below average, they'll be a wild card contender. I mean, I think it's going to be worse than that, but if it is at that level and their defense is what we think it's going to be, this team will be in it up until the end, which means maybe they don't go to Pickett.
Well, and you talked about Kenny Pickens merging quarterback and receiver into one player.
Yeah.
George Pickens here is one of the weapons in this offense. We've mentioned Chase Claypool before. You talked about fantasy and the way that you guys grade fantasy players in the almanac as well here. How do we deal with Najee Harris, who got a ton of volume last year? The offensive line is a definite work in progress here. How do you forecast what a guy who is, we've heard interviews from him, preparing for a similar workload heading into this season and what his production could be like potentially for fantasy owners and for the Steelers team in general?
I mean, I think we're expecting similar production with a similar workload. I think we have him like second, tied for second in carry share. I think we have Darwin Cook number one in carry share, and then we have him tied for second, and we have Derrick Henry right behind. We think Henry's going to get a fewer carries this year because they want to keep him healthy in case they make it to the playoffs. But I'm sure Najee Harris is going to get plenty of use, and that offensive line still doesn't look very good, so he's not necessarily going to be very efficient. And that's not necessarily his fault. There's just not going to be room to run. But, I mean, he's still a valuable fantasy asset because he's going to get used so much. And they, you know, even bad offenses do get near the goal line and they do score, and he's going to be scoring the touchdown. So
we've talked about some of the intangibles here, but, and you mentioned when we talked about Zach Taylor, some of the ways you can measure quality coaching. We all look at Mike Tomlin from the outside, and between for so long dealing with what Antonio Brown clearly was behind closed doors before we knew it as the outside world, absorbing all of the change that's gone on in these last few years, the decline of Ben Roethlisberger, and still somehow keeping his head above water here, from just a decision-making standpoint and the way we see this structured, how do you guys see Mike Tomlin as a head coach? Is there anything that separates him, or is a lot of that the intangible stuff that we have a hard time with?
Oh, it's the intangible stuff. Decision-making, when it comes to in-game decision-making, Tomlin is one of the worst coaches in the league, below average when it comes to like being aggressive on fourth downs. And he also has had this weird thing in his history where he like randomly goes for two, but not when any kind of chart would tell you to, just kind of when he feels like it randomly. But, I mean, there's no question, one, the consistency of the defense. The fact that defense is less consistent than offense. But Pittsburgh, like, he has been able to keep that defense focused and consistent year after year after year. But also, yeah, dealing with some of the personalities, especially what we've learned about Antonio Brown over the last couple of years. I mean, the dude gets major points.
He absolutely deserves all those marks, Brandon, no doubt.
Well, yeah, he's like the best babysitter in the NFL. But out of this, the four teams in AFC North, is there a chance that we have a three teams going into the playoffs?
I mean, there's a chance. It's unlikely. Mainly it's unlikely because the AFC West is probably sending three teams to the playoffs. And right. If they do, nobody else can. But it's possible if Deshaun Watson's only suspended for six games, then Cleveland becomes more of a serious wild card contender. And Cincinnati, if they really do solve the offensive line issues with the changes that they've made, then they're going to be better than our numbers had them last year. And then we think the Ravens are the favorite in the division. More likely, I think that you end up with one, you know, the division champion and one wild card team from here and two from the West. No disrespect to the East. And we have the South. We don't like the AFC South this year. So we think that the wild cards are most likely coming out of the North and the West.
All right. So potential wild card action. The Ravens back out in front of the pack here. And certainly a lot of questions in Cleveland. Again, everybody, check out the Football Outsiders Almanac. It is an incredible resource. As the NFL fans continue to get smarter and continue to want more depth into the way this is covered, Football Outsiders is going to provide that in droves. Aaron, always appreciate the time, man. I know we'll talk to you during the season as well as things get going, but thanks so much for helping us get ready here, man. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Really excited to be on the new show. And yeah, let's do it again during the season.
The 82-game preseason is in the books. It's finally time for some real basketball. Don't miss out on the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament all the way through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. And as we get going, man, the team nobody wants to face right now? Maybe the Philadelphia 76ers. Joel Embiid back and healthy, the third best odds to win the Eastern Conference, according to DraftKings Sportsbook here, makes them a really exciting team heading into this postseason run. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code GOJO. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code GOJO only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, Brandon, we had a busy day around here. We appreciate our guests for stopping by. I know you said you had trouble landing planes, but that's exactly what I need you to do right now because, Brandon, do you know what time it is?
Conversate for a few, because in a few we gonna do what we came to do. Ain't that right, boo? True. Forget the telly, we just go to the crib and watch a movie in a jacuzzi, smoke L's while you do it. I love it when you call me this, that, and the third. Put your hands in the air if you're a true player. I love it when you call me this, that, and the third. To the honeys getting monies, playing fellas like dummies. I love it when you call me this, that, and the third. You got a gun up in the waist, please don't shoot up the place. Why? Because I see some ladies tonight that should be having my baby. Baby.
Once you got over that first speed bump, you were humming, man. You were cruising down the street. You were ready to go.
You know, I did that, right? Because like most rap songs, they say conversate, which isn't a word. And I slipped up and said that to Chance today. And his smart ass heard me say conversate. And I couldn't get out of my head. And I was like, I got to do a rap song with conversate in it for this, that, and the third. Just to add a receipt to, I didn't make that one up.
Hey, man, listen, those are called happy accidents, all right? Bob Ross said so, and we're allowed to take them and make them art on this podcast, which is exactly what you did. Brandon, let's get to this inside of that art. This courtesy of Pete Thamel over at ESPN. Big news surrounding the college football playoffs board and the potential for a future that we've often talked about. So the 11 college presidents and chancellors who make up the college football playoffs board of managers. Now, that group is an extremely esteemed group of people that includes presidents from all 10 major conferences and Reverend John Jenkins from Notre Dame. Similar refrain that we often hear. What yes. They came together to talk about on Monday via Zoom was a discussion about the future of college football and restructuring how it's governed, with the idea presented that major college football could potentially be governed outside of the NCAA, and that the most logical place for the sport to be run would be under the college football playoff. It was discussed there. Now, they said, you know, sources said it was cautioned. These are early stage discussions. It was about a 5-minute portion of the meeting. So take it with a grain of salt at this point. But Brandon, I will say, this is something that we've whispered about as college football people for a long time. Why do they need it? The NCAA has never been a part of putting on big-time Division I college as champions. There has been no one actually governing the sport for quite a while. The NCAA comes in and punishes, but there is no czar that governs college Wow. football at this level. And so it would really be the first time that we had someone there. And so, Brandon, all I can tell you is this. The fact that these discussions are happening now means we should probably expect this inside the decade, because I'll never forget getting ready for college football season. ESPN does their seminars every year, and they usually bring someone in to speak about some of the big issues. And I believe it was Bill Hancock or someone from the playoff committee who came in, and when we asked about expansion, and this isn't proprietary information, this was out there, they were talking about expansion 4 or 5 years ago when we had that conversation. And I sat there and I went, okay, if those people are saying this out loud now, Right. This has been talked about behind closed doors in conversations we haven't heard, likely for a while, and we need to start to get ready for this. So I don't know how it works. Having the College Football Playoff Committee govern it always felt like maybe an imperfect idea, but the fact that they're kicking around, there is nothing more dangerous than smart, motivated, rich people, and that's what we've got in the room making these decisions.
And honestly, smart, motivated, rich people, that motivation is to kick other rich people away from the money that they're making.
Yes.
Right? Because at the end of the day, college football has just been sponsored by the NCAA. And if you're telling me that Condoleezza Rice and the rest of her friends can get together and create this new committee, this czar community that can switch to the highest bidder of who's it sponsored by, just like a TV rights deal.
Oh, well, Brandon, like they don't even sponsor the championship. They do nothing but come in and punish, does the NCAA. And so
I feel like it's that sticker, it's that logo that gets put on the college football. I feel like NCAA just chases it. Or is it the commercials during the game? Why do I associate the NCAA with the college football anything?
Because they are technically playing an NCAA sanctioned sport. And again, they've been the punishing body, but they are not the governing body. Whether it was the BCS, the College Football Playoff, or otherwise, the NCAA with FCS football, with what was formerly 1AA, the NCAA sponsors that championship. They sponsor the championships for March Madness and all these other sports. March Madness is where the NCAA makes their money. That is not the case with big time college football. Again, you talk about the wild, wild west with NIL. It's been the wild, wild west for who calls the shot. This thing has succeeded in spite of having anyone leading the charge on this thing. It's been led by the loudest voices in the room that tend to be the winningest, which is usually conferences like the SEC and the Big Ten. So the fact that they're talking about putting anyone in charge is just more of that shift towards the idea of a Premier League, a Champions League style super conference deal that might eventually have the sports where these programs don't have to operate under the NCAA laws about eligibility, about having the academic mission as a part of it. All of these are potential conversations born off this moment. So I thought that was interesting that, again, once these people start saying this shit out loud and somewhere where a source can give that information up, get ready, because it's not if, it's when. It is when this information is coming here. They also discussed briefly college football playoff expansion and wanting to potentially open that up because they think they left money on the table. Now that the TV deals are where they are and this is positioned as a Fox versus ESPN world, I don't think there's any way in hell that's happening. Nicole Arbach, we talked about, has reported on that. I think we can wave bye-bye to that until 2026. But story for another day on that. College football doing some moving, doing some shaking. Brandon, let's get to that. And the fine folks over at the Pewter Plank, at Fansided, brought back in. I had no idea. I have long since stopped paying attention to anything Antonio Brown has said. That man has proven himself a bad actor on multiple occasions in multiple ways, many of which are alleged crimes.
Yes.
So when he tweeted out, Tom Brady manipulate the game, gets 14 days, go home, get his mind right, LOL. Now you see the difference. Put that shit on. I had no idea that tweet even happened, but you brought this to my attention, and people are apparently still paying attention to what Antonio Brown has to say. Now, Brandon, apparently this is some half-assed way to compare himself to Tom Brady, as if the two of those are even remotely conducting their business in the same way in the lead-up to being great at what they do on the field. And so, while I don't think any comparison there exists at all, I don't know what point, I know what point he's trying to prove. He does an awful job of it because at this point, we are aware of what Antonio Brown is and how he operates, and it's nowhere near the same way that Tom Brady operates. So this is, once again, him trying to put himself in air that he does not belong in as far as being a professional, not being a competitor and a player.
I think he is in the perfect position to be what he's doing, and it's the order of Tom Brady news, right? Like, he was allowed to breathe the same air as Tom Brady. He was invited to his house. He was on the TB12 method for a little bit, both in New England and in Tampa Bay. So, although he may not be the most trusted voice on Tom Brady, like Tom Brady Sr., He is a close voice, and we are just waiting for him to say.
You think any more after what he did that there is any bridge left there?
No. But after all the talk about how close they were and Tom Brady saving Antonio Brown and all that other stuff, like obviously his antics are one thing. And not to mention, let's not forget what Tom Brady was on his podcast talking about the day after or days after Antonio Brown left him with the Jets and quit in that infamous way. I think there's some sympathy there, and Tom Brady's always acting as if he is still like close with Antonio Brown and he's the guy that can help him and save him. And for AB to continue to bite the hand that feeds him, the fact that the hand that he's biting is Tom Brady's is interesting, Mike. And every time that Antonio Brown brings up Tom Brady's name, I'm listening, and so are the people in Pewter.
Why? Why would anyone care? Tom Brady's not because still telling Antonio Brown doesn't know any more about this situation than you or me.
I don't know. I ain't never been to Tom Brady's house. He has. And I'm telling you what, they're just waiting for him to leak out some information, the fact that he actually is a clone. Like, that's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for Antonio Brown to say something that's more online of what I've been saying. Tom Brady is actually a vampire. Like, let me hear it. Tell me the truth, AB.
That is actually a source where I would expect that news to come to light from. So we will wait. That's the next time I will pay attention to anything Antonio Brown says, is when he comes out and accuses Tom Brady of being a vampire, and not a moment sooner than that. So we will wait around for that moment in time. But Brandon, let's get to the third here. And the third is news more in line with the spirit of this podcast. According to CNN yes. Business, Papa John's is debuting pizza bowls. No toppings, just crust. We know early in the pandemic, people were just putting down pizza left and right.
No. No crust, all top, just toppings.
Oh, what did I say?
You said the opposite, which was a bread bowl.
No crust. That is... me just acting like Papa John's invented bread bowls.
They're going to be sourdough, and they're thinking about putting soup in it.
Believe this motherfucking shit. Just toppings, no crust in these pizza bowls. So apparently for Papa John's, sales are still up, but growth is slowing, which is corporate greed for we've got to find some way to get this gravy train going back and making us the money that we were used to. And so they assumed that meant people were tired of pizza, according to Scott Rodriguez, their SVP of Menu Strategy and Innovations, which sounds like a dope-ass title. And so they thought they would offer a new spin on this, which essentially looks like Hot Pockets in a little bowl that Papa John's has put out here. It comes in three varieties: garden veggie, chicken Alfredo, and Italian meats trio.
Stop. Say them flavors again.
Garden veggie, chicken Alfredo, and Italian meats trio. So, Brandon, I only have one question, which is, do Papa John's pizza bowls have a mommy and a daddy?
Sounds like one of them doesn't, and the other two do. Okay? The chicken Alfredo and the three sausage meats, whatever. Listen, no one's asking Papa John's to get into the pokey game. Like, we don't need
this,
you.
This pizza pokey ass.
Like, we don't need you to do top ramen. Like, we don't need you to be a ramen shop. Like, this is like my. Remember when Pizza Hut started putting out pasta? Like, the Tuscan pastas, like the family pastas.
Oh, Brandon.
And they were like 3,000 calories.
Oh, yeah. No, those were deadly. Is this as egregious as when IHOP did the thing where they decided to be IHOB and be International House of Burgers?
No bullshit, Mike. I got an email the other day from IHOP and said, we've changed. We've changed our system. You need to reset your password. IHOP, a password that I probably only set up when I was living in LA, in Marina Del Rey, by an IHOP, and that burger when it was IHOB, and I was like, I gotta try one of these burgers.
Brandon, I can't even front. That's some of the fattest shit I've ever heard in my life. They hit you. They probably hit you with several notifications that you missed before that. Like, hey, big head, you forget about us. Come back here and reactivate this subscription. You hear?
Hey, I delete that so quick. I was like, no, devil, no,
not today.
I'm on the way down.
So I also want to know with this, how many of these has Papa John himself personally ingested? Because remember when he was back going through it after he got found out saying all that racist shit, that he ate 40 pizzas in 30 days? How many of these could he put down? Because without the breading, it's got to be an astronomical number.
Mike, without the breading, why would you want to put those subpar toppings that are only good after they're toasted?
Bro, I don't know why he'd want to eat 40 pizzas in 30 days. Like, guess what? Like, even for me, that's some wild stuff. So, listen, there's a lot of Papa John's judgment that I'm allowed to question. And so I can only assume that this is how he operates with all product. And he's had like 60 of these pizza sleeves in 30 days.
Can I talk to you? We can end this after this. I just want to tell you about my history of Papa John's.
Uh-oh.
So Papa John's first franchise was in Louisville, Kentucky, right? Because they wouldn't let him start it where he's from, right across the river in Jeffersonville, Indiana. Papa John's went to Ball State, was a business major in the entrepreneurial program, worked at Greek's Pizza, a famous pizzeria in Muncie, and once he made his millions and started Papa John's, he went to Muncie, Indiana, and tried to put the name Papa John's on their stadium. The Schumann family at Ball State said, nah, dog, we good. And he went to Louisville and made it the Louisville Papa John's Stadium, where he made his pizza. And just how Popeyes is better in Louisiana, Papa John's is better in Louisville. I just want to say that. So all this racism that comes out of him, I'm not capping for him, like that's definitely who he is, because that's kind of how Louisville is. Was it's the racism that's in the pizza, the real ingredients, real racism. It should be hitting with the garlic butter. So, anyways, I got a long history with Papa John's. It's troubled. It's storied. He's just following me everywhere I go, man.
Real ingredients, real racism. We appreciate everyone who is an ally who makes it to the end of this podcast and rejects racism in its many forms, even the kind baked into delicious crusts that are no longer on these pizzas. If you have a chance, download, subscribe, rate, and review Gojo wherever you get your podcast. Leave us a 5-star rating and a review. We hope you enjoy both guests and a little bit of a different format for this podcast today. We're still early, and like we said, we want to try things that are new, spice it up, and keep our podcast bedroom very, very spicy with all you guys who are kind enough to listen to us. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you guys again tomorrow.
Bye, guys.
Like a lot of people out there, I'm a big Swiftie. And so as you can imagine, when the Taylor Swift Eras Tour was announced last summer, it was like the Super Bowl for me. I had everything ready to go to give myself the best chance of getting great tickets. My whole family was in on the action. We spent hours in front of our monitors waiting for the link for the presale before the presale so that when we got our chance in line, we clicked the right button at the right time to make sure we had our chance at great seats for this once-in-a-lifetime concert opportunity. Because when you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else is going to get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Gojo. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. So amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Gojo. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/Gojo. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.